Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 51 and a half. It is bonus episode time. John Morgan, Cold Coffee in Brisbane, Australia. UFC Fight Night 85 is in the books. We're back here at the Brisbane Marriott Hotel. There's camps partying around us, people having a good time. Some people soaking their sorrows in a beverage or two. Other people enjoying what really was a fun night, man. This card on paper was not big. But it ended up being big on entertainment.
Yeah, I agree. It's another one of those ones everybody says, oh, it's just a fight night card. Should I stay up to watch it? Should I whatever? And it always seems to deliver when most people always doubt them. And so it's another reason to just tell people, just don't doubt them. You think there's a card, you know, that maybe it doesn't have all these people you don't know. The level of athletes that fight in the UFC are incredible. And I think they're capable of pulling out the fights that we saw tonight, and it was well worth watching.
It was a lot of fun, top to bottom. Of course, it was the unique experience here where we got up and took the 7 a.m. shuttle to get to the fights, which is always a unique experience. I mean, even now, it's 6:30 p.m. local time as we're starting to record this. Normally, it's about 6 o'clock a.m. in Vegas when we're doing this stuff, so kind of nice.
Kind of like it,
right? We might actually get to pack this thing up and have a couple of frosty beverages like a normal human being. So, well, let's talk about a man that said he was going to be having some Grey Gooses tonight, Mark Hunt. What a performance by Mark Hunt. Gotta say, you know, Mark Hunt, a legend of the sport. I mean, truly a legend of the sport. Of course, you know, a legend of kickboxing as well. But the guy is one of the most unique individuals in the sport today. But while you're normally stuck backstage, there was not a ton of media here. There was plenty of space. And so you actually got a seat on the floor during the main card after you were done working in the back. And so you got to experience the main card out there. And let's just start with the walk-in. Mark Hunt making his way to the cage. Just the words that were in my head as he was walking in was, hero's welcome. That's what it felt like to me, like a damn hero was walking into the building.
Yeah, you're right. And I kind of took a moment sitting there because you're right. Normally I'm in the back, and at first I wasn't even going to tell anybody I was out there because I'm hopefully nobody get thrown under the bus for actually letting me sit out there. I won't say who gave me the tickets or the seats, whatever. But no, it was incredible. When it happened, you know, rather than look at the screen, I just took the time to kind of look around the arena and just kind of take it all in. And I got goosebumps from it. It was amazing, you know.
Absolutely.
It was a great song selection, which was awesome because it was Queen.
Right.
Which I love Queen, so Under Pressure. That was good stuff. But, no, it was great. It was incredible. I thought he was very focused, and it was awesome seeing the crowd behind him. And he was just so something. He's been so comfortable this whole week, and even right before he was getting ready to go into the octagon and fight, and he still looked cool as ice. And just coming into the roar of the crowd, I mean, that had to be like what the gladiators felt like coming in, just like fucking just on top of the world, you know.
It was awesome. It of course he is a New Zealand native, but he's lived in Sydney for a long time. And as we have learned through our recent trips to Australia, that if a New Zealand guy makes it big, Australia is more than happy to just call him one of their own, basically.
Well, hey, you know, even the lovely Fight Club members that we've been hanging out the past couple nights, you know, we've been claimed by them as well. So once you drink with an Australian, you know, we've been dubbed Australian. So
that'll work.
So we're there. We're Aussies now. that was a work in progress.
Go ahead, throw it out there.
Yeah, it was Aussies. G'day, mate. We're just here doing a podcast.
It just get worse and worse every week. Mark Hunt got the job done in 3 minutes and 1 second. Derek Lewis called, what, 306 of the first round, by the way?
Kudos.
Our man, the Black Beast, dude.
Kudos
is just,
to the Black Beast, man. That dude, he's psychic, man. He's psychic.
He's psychic. But 3 minutes, 1 second, a right hand to the ear, basically, to the temple. Got it done. Just, I want to say the way the fight played out. I mean, I think everybody knew that Mark Hunt was going to be his most dangerous in the first round. Frank's camp readily admitted that. Ricky Lindell, Angelo Reyes, we talked to him this week. They admitted, yes, the first round we know when Mark's going to be the most dangerous. So I just got to say, I mean, I know Frank was probably playing a little bit of a waiting game and trying to get through that first round and maybe let Mark tire a little bit, but Frank just never looked settled to me. He just didn't look right. There was a kind of a weird moment early on where he kind of slipped a punch and then, like, was kind of veering, like viewing off to the side a little bit. And it just looked weird to me. And I mean, the guy's that was his 27th trip to the cage. I mean, the man knows what he's doing in the UFC octagon, but Frank Mir just didn't ever look settled to me tonight.
Yeah, I saw that moment you did. It was almost like what we've seen, like, Jones and some of these other guys. They use the peripheral vision. They kind of look down where they're kind of walking away, but it looks like he was, like, looking off to his peripheral vision to see if he's coming in, but it was like, that is such a dangerous move, especially with the guy like Mark Hunt, which, I mean, granted, he must have thought the reach, it wasn't going to be able to touch him, but it just, I was like, why? Where is that coming from? Why are you doing that? I've never seen you do that before. Why now against probably one of the most dangerous opponents you've ever faced? But you're right. I thought he was going to come out and maybe try some more leg kicks and try to work the distance a little bit. And, you know, he was trying to move. You know, Mark was kind of sort of methodically stalking him in a little bit. But, yeah, I don't know. Just something, it just didn't look right. But also, there's always that initial feeling out process where everybody's kind of going to be looking a little bit. And, you know, they want to test the range and take a little bit. And it never, like, he felt like he got through that point.
Right.
You know, he never had a chance and just never seemed to get comfortable and really kind of ease in there. Maybe a couple more minutes, maybe if it would have got through the first round, maybe it would have felt a little more comfortable.
Thank you, sir.
But, you know, at 2 minutes in or 3 minutes in, you know, he hadn't got there. And it's unfortunate because I wanted to see some more of the striking and some more of the stuff that he'd been working on, because I know he's been working hard with Angelo and all those guys, and it's just unfortunate we didn't really get to see all that work.
Fresh frosty beverages have been delivered.
That's
a great thing to see as we lay out this bonus content here. Yeah, it should be said, I mean, Frank Mir did get inside a couple times. He did get his hands on Mark Hunt a little bit, which, you know, he wanted to get the fight to the ground. Mark was able to kind of push him away and stay upright, so Mark kind of showed that underrated takedown defense that he has. I don't think he really gets highly rated on, but he's not an easy guy to get to the floor. And then delivered that huge right hand, and did the trademark, you know, Mark Hunt walk off. And I wanted to talk to our buddy Mark Goddard, and maybe he'll come back. We saw him as we were pulling up. He was actually walking down the street going out to have a few beverages of his own. But I just wanted to get his thoughts on why he decided to make the call that he did. Because if you'll notice, I mean, Mark Goddard came in and made sure and got a good look. I mean, he got right on top, but he didn't signal it right away. He waited, you know, looked at Frank Mir, checked his eyes, and then made that call. So, you know, we know our buddy Mark Goddard's one of the best in the business, but I did want to get what his thought process was. So hopefully we'll run across him and we can get that. But I thought it was cool to see that he did. You know, it wasn't like Mark Hunt just called his finish. Mark actually came in there, and Mark Goddard actually came in there and checked it out as well.
Yeah, and you can tell that the sound of it was – You could just tell it was completely solid. But even Mark took a couple steps forward. You know, Frank kind of had that look. He was looking up, and even when Mark went in there, Goddard went in there and leaned, he didn't move his arm. He kind of kept that stare. So I think he saw enough. And I think Hunt, being the professional that he is, and having the power that he has, he's done that to many guys. I think he was able to recognize it quicker than most people that it was done. And I love it when he does his little walk off, because one, it looks completely badass. But two, he's never tried. He doesn't want to hurt anybody, and he always says that too. You know, he's there to get the job done, but there wasn't any malice between those two. So he wouldn't want to hurt Frank more than he would have to get the job done. So, but yeah, it looks completely badass when he does his little walk off. I mean,
just amazing. I mean, Mark Hunt has a weapon that can win a fight at any point in time, and there's not many people that can say that. Like, I mean, that dude can stop a fight at any moment, at any point, just one strike. That's incredible. I mean, not a lot of people, even in the heavyweight division, know, oh, they're all big guys, anybody can go. Yeah, but not many people can have that one shot power at any time. It's amazing. 41 years old, still wants a title shot, wants to go away. I thought one of the great stories of this week, we all knew the story about, you know, Mark Hunt being a part of the Pride purchase, the UFC asking him to go away, him saying, no, I don't want to go away. But this week was the first time I'd ever heard where Dana White actually was on record as saying they offered him $300,000 to go away, to just say, take the money, leave, bye, thank you. And he said, I don't want your $300,000. I want to fight and prove to you that I belong in the UFC. And it's just like amazing character. I thought that was one of the – finally seeing a dollar figure on it. Knew the story for years. But finally seeing how much money was on the table. It wasn't like here's 50 grand. Like, F you, I can make 50 grand on my next fight. No, here's $300,000. Just go do something else. Have fun. Live that's your life.
Life-changing.
Hell no. I'm going to prove to you that I belong. I think that's amazing. It just shows the kind of character that Mark Hunt has. He wants a title shot. He's got a ways to go. You know, there's some guys in front of him, but it's an exciting time right now. In the MMA Junkie rankings that, of course, are going to change coming up this week, he's currently ranked number 11 in the world in the heavyweight division. But 1 through 8 are all booked for fights right now. It's amazing because, I mean, you know, the next two main events are heavyweight main events as well. I mean, there's going to be a lot of shuffling in the heavyweight division right now. And when you make a statement like that, when you go in and you finish a former champion in the first round, I think you get a chance to maybe slide by some other guys depending on how things work. So, and of course, you know, the UFC is always about making the fights that fans want to see. They are always playing into fan favorites. I mean, Mark Hunt is one of those guys that fans just love him. I mean, certainly down here they love him. But, I mean, even back in the States, people just love – how do you not love a guy like Mark Hunt?
It's true.
And I think that I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to think that he could get another shot.
I would love to see it. I mean, you're right. I mean, people love him, and he delivers. I mean, that's all you want, you know. I mean, I say fast-track him. Fast-track him up to the – you know, I mean, but you're right. If everybody's book it sucked, you know, he's got to sit there and kind of wait. But – what do? You know, you don't want to let him sit too long on the side, but in the same sense, I don't want to risk losing and maybe having to start this over again because he's kind of said, or at least alluded to the fact that this is like his last run at things, you know. So I want him to plan it smart, don't rush it, you know, pick the ones, make sure it's a higher ranked guy, and, you know, let's fast track. I mean, he's shown it. I mean, doing what he did to Frank Mir, I mean, there's not many that I think could take that punch and walk away. So, yeah, let's put him up there. I'd love to see what he does to some of the guys that are maybe a little bit more dynamic and maybe not have more to show than maybe what
Yeah,
like
I mean,
Mir
listen, he's not going to get a title shot right off this. Yeah. Obviously, we're saying that. But, I mean, you've got JDS and Ben Rothwell in April. That's just a couple of weeks away. You know, he could potentially face the winner of that. You know, a month later, you've got Alistair and Andre Arlovsky in the Netherlands. I mean, there's something there. So some big fights on the horizon. And then, of course, the title fight is just 2 months from now with Fabricio Werdum and Stipe Miocic in Brazil. So a lot of fun stuff on the horizon for Mark Hunt. He was his usual self at the press conference. He's never – I won't say that he's not eloquent. He's not long-winded. He will get right to the point and answer your questions. But let's hear it from the victorious Mark Hunt.
Just a quick question for Mark. Mark, obviously a highlight reel finish there over Frank Mir. You spoke in the post-fight press conference that part of you – it was a bit tough for you because you and Frank sort of got to know each other over this time. You like him as a person. Can you describe what you think of Frank Mir and everything that he's achieved in his career?
I think it's great. I mean, Frank's a great guy. I first met him, you know, he took photos. He's accomplished a lot. He's become the UFC champion and something I never did. So, you know, I have a lot of respect for Frank and his skill set, you know. Just tonight, there's always a winner and loser, so just the way it is. Just work.
So, Mark, just on that, you talked about making another run for the title shot. And I know that you don't like to play matchmaker yourself. But if you were to, who do you want to pick?
I'd fight any of the top guys. You know, I could rematch any of those guys. JDS, Stipe, we'd go with the bout, Fabricio. Fabricio. You know, I can rematch these guys. I've never lost a rematch. So I'd like to rematch any one of those guys. And, yeah, it doesn't matter where we can party. I can party anywhere.
Just quickly for Mark, you're kind of known as the king of the walk-off knockout. A lot of times it's not smart to let a guy off the hook. But what is it that you see or you feel to know that there's no reason to even go to the ground that the fight's over?
I got Frank. He was still in the Darklands when I saw him. His face was still – he wasn't there, so I just left it. So, yeah. He wasn't there, but I couldn't see it. He was out somewhere else. Well, it's true. He wasn't there. He was blacked out somewhere.
Obviously, it's a very cagey start the first minute or so. Were you deliberately thinking about setting him up in the way you did for the knockout?
This is correct.
So you foresaw it?
Yeah, no. I was just trying to see how he was moving around. So, yeah, just trying to plan it a bit more.
So that you saw that sort of left jab, when he ducked from your left jab, yeah, you'd come through with the right hand.
I was going to shoot an uppercut through there, but I thought he was a bit slower, so I just thought I'll catch him early with a straight right, and yeah, that's what ended the fight. So, yeah.
So Mark Hunt victorious in the main event of UFC Fight Night 85. Just an incredible performance by him. One-shot power, man. That dude is scary. Co-main event. Man, I thought we were going to get a good fight. I picked Neil Magny going into this fight. I thought that Hector Lombard's gas tank was going to be a problem. All that proved to be true. But holy shit, I did not think that Neil Magny's a damn superhero. That guy... Yeah. I had to tweet afterwards. Neil Magny gets blasted in the first round, somehow survives, just keeps fighting and fighting and fighting, taking just shot after shot after shot, gets up, survives to the second round, comes out in the second, gets dropped again in the second round, and then from that point on, the tide starts to turn. He gets the fight down, nearly finishes the fight in the second round. We'll definitely talk about that in just a second. Ends up getting the finish just 46 seconds in the third round. This is a signature type win. I mean, Neil Magny is now 10-1 in his last 11 fights. That's insane. And you beat a guy like Hector Lombard, that means something. I mean, that is a dangerous dude. And I had to tweet right after it. I'm like, that's inspirational, dude. Like, Neil Magny is inspirational. Yeah. I mean, that to me was just like an emotion-filled fight. And I just don't see how you can be a fan of mixed martial arts and not be a fan of Neil Magny.
I agree. I happened to tweet as well, and I tweeted that was Army toughness. You know, that's a U.S. vet right there. That's Army. That's the kind of guys that are so determined to not give up. And he took some serious pounding. I mean, Hector Lombard throws bombs. He is such an impressive, scary dude. And when he took those shots, you know, I'll be honest. You know, I know we're impartial. We're sitting on media row. We're not really supposed to sort of cheer. But in my head, I'm like, get up, you know. Get up, fucking, you know, get up, get up. You know, I wanted that fight to go longer, you know, but it was starting to play out like what we all thought it could happen and be done and over quicker. And, I was so proud when he kept moving. And the difference between that, and we'll talk later what happens to Hector, was that he was actively moving. He was keeping control. He was switching things. Even though he took some bombs, but he was defending himself. And I'm glad there wasn't a stoppage there. And he seemed to just kind of snap out of it and wake up a little bit. I mean, he took some hard shots. But he was still able to deliver. I thought he used his legs well to defend himself. But his heart that he showed was just incredible. I've always been a fan of Neil, but I'm even more now a fan just for what he did. That was so impressive. I think that, hands down, was my favorite fight I've ever seen him fight in. And just to persevere like he did and then to overcome and look so dominant going into the, you know, in the second and finally into the third. Kudos to him. I mean, if people don't understand and think Neil Magny is a badass, you're absolutely fucking crazy.
That's it, man.
He is amazing. That's amazing, amazing heart.
He's my hero, man.
Skill.
Yeah. He's my hero. The stats are incredible. You pull up Fight Metric. This is one of the most bizarre stat fights you'll ever see. The first round, Hector Lombard landed 50 of 62 significant strikes. That's 80%. He landed 50 shots. And as you said, I ended up scoring both rounds 10-9. And a lot of people say that both rounds, both first and second, could be 10-8. In thinking about them, I was close to pulling the trigger on both of them as 10-8s. I scored 10-9s, but I definitely don't have the judges all scored 10-9s as well. But both rounds could have been 10-8 one way or the other. So let's start with the first round. Hector Lombard all over Neil Magny. I didn't have a problem with the fight not being stopped because I felt like while Neil was certainly in trouble and he was certainly getting beat up, he was moving. He was responding. Yep. I felt like he was adjusting positions. The defense was, let me move my hand. Let me move my body. Let me move my head. Let me try. Let me turn positions. I felt like he was responding. Yes, he was getting hurt. He was getting beat up. But I felt like he was responding, and I thought it was fine for the fight not to be stopped in the opening round. The second round, I thought it should have been stopped. If you look at the stats there, Neil Magny, 114 of 142, according to Fight Metric. 114 shots landed in one round. Incredible. Including 92 of 104 strikes on the floor.
Wow.
That is insane. And I thought that fight should have been stopped in the second round because unlike the first round with Neil Magny moving, I thought Hector Lombard was pretty much stationary at that point.
He was.
I mean, he was hurt. He had been flattened out. And I thought he was content to just basically cover up and take the shots. And to me, that's not intelligent defense.
Yeah, there was a point that first time because he got flattened out in the middle of the octagon before he moved off to the side. And that's where it just got obscene, where they were up against the cage. But even when he was right there in the center, he got flattened out. He put his hands on his ears, and he's just taking shots. At that point, I kind of even yelled out. I was just like, just stop it already. Right. And then he let him roll over. I mean, these guys are so tough. They're so durable. And at some point, they just get into survival mode. At that point, it's like this guy's trying to kill me. I need to do it. And he did that, and he was able to kind of move and got over towards the octagon, the ring, and it just kept on continuing. And the ref's watching the whole time, and I can't understand what he was possibly thinking or what he was looking for. There was no intelligent defense. There was no moving. He was locked in that position. And at some point, I mean, even when you have Neil, I mean, granted, fighters at times will look up and say, hey, are you serious? Are you going to stop this now? Often it happens way too early, you know, and they're just doing whatever. But this is after he probably landed 50 or 60 shots. You know, there's a certain point where a fighter, what is it? What's the phrase? Where the inactivity or something, where you undefended activity. I don't know what the phrase is. But at some point, if they don't strike back, if they're not doing something, you have to stop. And it clearly went past that point. I don't know what the ref was thinking in his head, you know, what he was watching to not think that it was already at that point.
I mean, here's the only thing I could think in my head, and I'm not trying to defend Steve Percival, but I'll say this. I mean, to me, it was almost like, well, I let it go on in round one with Neil in a lot of trouble, so now I feel like I have to let it go on in round two with Hector in trouble. Like, I almost felt like if round one hadn't played out the way it had, that he would have made the stop. But since round one played out the way it had, then he felt like he had to let round two play out the same. Like he owed both guys that measure of belief or opportunity to recover. But I thought it was a poor decision. And Tom Wright at the post event press conference said that he thought it was a poor decision as well. Neil said he thought it was a poor decision. He said you could see Neil's frustration at the end of the second round. And in talking to him, I think where that was coming from wasn't so much that he was – I mean, he was pissed, but I think he was pissed because, like, how many times do I have to hit this guy? You know, like, it's such a weird thing, this sport, because, I mean, it's hand-to-hand combat, and the point is to go in there and to inflict damage on your opponent. But these men and women, most of them, if not all of them, don't really want to do, like, serious damage. It's like you just want to do what you have to do to win the fight.
Right.
And I think at some point, like, even Neil was just like, dude – how many times are you going to make me hit this guy?
Yeah.
And, I will say, I guess, at least in the third, Steve Percival didn't allow much to go on. I mean, it was a pretty short leash because Neil right away got in top position. He was in mount. Looked like the armbar was there, but he just kind of kept punching away. And I guess at least he didn't let it go on too long from that point. So if there is a kudos to be given at all, I guess that would be it. But I did think this was pretty poor officiating. I
agree. The guy, I'm sure he's a great ref most times. And everybody has their bad moments. I actually watched the ref after it. If you watch him, he follows him over to the corner when he went in there. When Hector went over, he actually was following him. I think he was watching to see if he was okay. I thought he still looked out of it at the start of the third. So when that first sort of shot, they kind of just set up what eventually was the takedown and all the other stuff. He was still not there, and I think at that point he probably could have made a judgment call in between the round to say it shouldn't continue, but it didn't happen there as well. So at least he made the judgment call that once it finally got and he got on the top position and dropped that elbow that opened him up, that he made the quick call to stop it. But, I don't know. I just feel like he was maybe had a bad day because he was not there doing what he was supposed to do, because upmost he's supposed to protect the fighter, and he didn't do a good job of it.
He didn't. Hector Lombard finished for the first time in 40 professional fights. I didn't actually – I wasn't aware of that statistic going in until John Anik said it on the mic. But the first finish loss of his career, he's 38 years old. Man, Hector Lombard's a dangerous dude. He's a scary man. But after that first 5 minutes, he was done. He was done. Like, he was stationary. I mean, there's
– He put so many punches, though. When he had – Neil hurt, he threw, like you said, the whatever 50 or 60 or hard shots that he's thrown, and he's putting everything. That just shows how damn tough Neil is.
Yeah.
I mean, he throws so much, and he carries around a lot of muscle. So I can only imagine that, going that hard pace, that when he didn't finish, I think he assumed that in that first flurry that he was going to get the finish. So he willed himself to use all that energy that he did, and unfortunately it didn't end. and he was left, you know, looking for more. But yeah, he's such an impressive dude. I mean, but I think he still, for the most part, destroys most people that he will fight. Yep. You know, but Neil is just, as we've seen, as we've said, he's a superhero.
He's a superhero, man. He is a beast. All right. Neil Magny has fought 5 times each of the last 2 years. Incredible. He's put 10 fights together in a 2-year stretch. He says that he'll still fight frequently, but as you know, we talked to him earlier this week, and you'll remember that conversation. He said, listen, I understand I may have to slow down a little bit as I get to the top because I only want to fight those top guys. And he said that you know he wants to fight a top 5 type fighter in his next outing, and I think that makes a lot of sense. You've got Demian Maia and Matt Brown. You got that fight coming up on May 14th at UFC 198. That's an incredible fight. You got Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and Rory McDonald. They're booked to fight in June. Johnny Hendricks is out there. I think that would be a big fight for him. Tyron Woodley. Now, Tyron's kind of made it clear that he wants to stand out and wait for a title shot. He feels like he's owed one right now and kind of wants to get that fight with Robbie Lawler. Of course, Robbie Lawler, looked for a time, might be fighting might be fighting Conor McGregor, as weird as it is to think about that now. I mean, that was 2 weeks ago. We were talking about that as a possible fight. But now, you know, there's no matchup for Robbie Lawler. I don't think Neil Magny can lay claim to a title shot right now. I think there's just a couple people ahead of him. I think the Hendricks fight would be a good fight, or I really think the Tyron Woodley fight would be a good fight as well. If Tyron's not getting the title shot right away, you know, kind of by default, I guess, because the McGregor thing didn't happen. I don't know. I'd like to see one of those two fights, I think, come together.
Yeah, I am way with that. I think a Woodley-Magny fight would be incredible. Because Woodley's another one, though. He has really a lot of speed, a lot of quickness, a lot of power. But he's had problems in the past as well, sort of gassing out like Lombard has. But, yeah, I mean, I'd be super psyched to see that one. And now I'd have to kind of give Magny the favor on most guys just for the fact of seeing what he did. But Tyrone's a different beast, and who knows? But I would like to say maybe give him one more and then give him a possible shot because 10-1 is absolutely ridiculous.
It's insane. Neil Magny 2 years ago was an 8-3 fighter.
Yeah.
On a 2-fight losing streak and looked like, where's this kid going? Now he's got an 18-4 career record. I imagine 10 fight purses. I know he's not on one of those, you know, million-dollar Conor McGregor money type purses, but I imagine he's put a little bit of money away.
Yeah.
Man, the dude is just on a nice roll. And, of course, you know, how good are they looking up there in Colorado right now? Dan Hooker was in his corner for Neil Magny tonight. And, of course, Dan Hooker picked up an impressive, impressive win earlier in the night as well. But good things going on for Neil Magny. So
yeah.
Let's hear from Neil. The victorious Neil Magny, the guy, nobody goes 10-1 in the UFC. Nobody. Nobody. And Neil Magny goes 10-1, and this might have been the most impressive of any of those wins yet. Just incredible night for Neil.
Start with Neil, if you don't mind. Obviously, an incredible win for you tonight. Give us an idea of what was going through your head in the first round. A lot of trouble there. I mean, how hurt were you really, and kind of what you was going through your mind as that first round played out?
I was definitely hurt going into the first round. Once I got down to the mat, I was just kind of like just find a position to protect myself and then find a way to get back to the feet and recover. I thought I was doing so by trying to protect my chin against the cage, but then I started eating shots in the back of the head. So I just had to switch it up and try something different because that defense wasn't working. So I just had to find a way to just dig deep and drive on.
Of course, the momentum changed entirely the second round. You were on top, punching away, looking up at the ref. It looked like you were actually kind of disgusted when the round ended or confused or frustrated or something. What was your emotion when the fight wasn't stopped?
You just kind of go out for the guy. I mean, as much as we're in the sport to win or whatever, like it's harder as an individual to like really sit there and put that kind of damage on a guy. And not have it stopped. I mean, the ref's supposed to be to protect the fighter, and he wasn't in a position to protect himself at all, and the ref should have stepped in earlier, I thought. But I don't know. That's not my job. I guess I can just keep fighting. I don't know.
I know you're a company guy, and we'll do whatever the UFC asks you to, but when you're 10-1, you get to wield a little bit of power. So what do you think should be next for you?
If I had my way, I'd just kind of wait for a top-5 opponent and then eventually make a title run for years over. That would be my goal.
Thanks, Neil.
Thank you.
Tom, if I could for you just quickly, there was a lot of discussion about the fight not being stopped and, you know, potential danger of an opponent, that sort of thing. From your point of view, you know, maybe the other executives, if you heard anything, what's the position there? Were you guys a little concerned that it wasn't stopped in the second?
No, we were a lot concerned. I think Neil said it best. You know, it's the referee's job is to make sure that a fight is stopped if the athlete can't protect himself or herself. And I clearly, I'm sitting right beside, not quite as close as the referee was, but I thought that fight should have been stopped, and it should have been stopped a long time before. Because in the end, as I think Neil said it best.
Question for Neil. Neil, over here. Just want to ask you about the weight cut. Obviously, the overnight weight cut, you know, it's a lot of weight for you, and you do it regularly, very, very regularly. Just want to know how you felt going into the fight this morning.
I felt great. I got weight cutting down to a science. I mean, for me, making weights as easy as, like, just cutting out bacon for my diet, and I make it pretty easy. So it wasn't an issue at all. I mean, I kind of did enjoy having the entire day to rehydrate and things like that, but overall it was great.
So you like the time zone for the fight, fighting during the day and having that time to prepare? You want to come back down here?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it did. I didn't feel like it affected me at all. I mean, back home, I train throughout different times of the day, whether it's doing jiu-jitsu, striking, or strength conditioning. I'm constantly training throughout the day, so the time here didn't make a difference at all.
Thanks.
No problem.
Obviously, a win over Lombard is a big, big deal. He's a big, big name in the division. A lot of fighters are tied up at the moment in the top 10, but if you could choose somebody who you'd like to fight next, does anyone stand out to you?
Not really. I mean, my ultimate goal is to get a title shot. So whoever it is that's in front that I need to fight in order to do so, that's the person I want to fight. I mean, I feel like I did a great job up to this point fighting anyone who UFC told me to fight anywhere, anytime. So at this point, I feel like it's time to be a little bit selfish and try to get that fight to give me the title shot.
It's interesting that you mentioned the title shot. At the moment, not really clear who Robbie's going to be defending his title against. Who do you think should be the person that gets the next title shot in your division, apart obviously from yourself?
Might be a little bit biased, but I think a guy like Demian Maia would be close to being in line, but he has a fight coming up, so we see how that one goes. But yeah, I mean, you just never know. I mean, the guy was the most active guy in the top five so far, so I would see him be the most deserving of a title shot at the moment, but he has a fight against Matt Brown May 14th, so I guess I'll wait till that fight and see what happens. But I'm open for any of the other four guys who are looking for a fight and looking for an opportunity to say they deserve the next title shot.
So Neil Magny, I could talk about that man all night. It really was just an absolutely inspiring performance. The other featured fight of the night, Jake Matthews, earning a third-round submission over Johnny Case. I thought this was a great fight for Jake Matthews. A 21-year-old kid has all the makings to be the future of Australian MMA. I think this kid's going to be around for a long time and do some damage. I was a little worried about him early on, though. Johnny Case is tough, man. This is one of those
super
fights
tough,
where I think both these guys came out, I don't want to say winners. Of course, you know, Johnny Case sucks for him. He loses for the first time in the UFC. He has a long winning streak come to an end. But I felt like he showed his durability, too. I think these guys are two young kids that are going to be around for a while. But let's talk about Jake Matthews. I was a little worried about him in the beginning. Neil Magny himself, that's my hero right there. That's my hero.
Superhero.
Man, incredible, dude. Incredible win. Yeah, Jake Matthews came out. And, you know, this was a little bit of back and forth all week. And, you know, Johnny Case was calling him a punk and, you know, bully.
Yeah.
And I thought Jake came out in early going, like, throwing as hard as he could. It looked like he was pissed off.
Yeah.
He was trying to prove a point early. And Case was fighting smart on the outside, kind of sticking and moving and doing good things. And Johnny Case was actually winning the fight. And I saw a lot of people pissed about the scores, but that's the way I actually had it, too. They were very close rounds. But I thought Johnny Case was winning the fight. And then Jake Matthews sticks with it, hurts him with a couple shots to the body, and ends up getting the third-round submission. Just 15 seconds left in the fight, gets the rear naked choke, and I thought it was just an incredible performance.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get out there to sit down and watch the fights just in time for that fight, and I thought it was amazing. I mean, they're throwing some shots, and you could tell that there was definitely some extra little pepper in them, you know, and then they'd kind of contact, and then you'd see these little smiles, these little smirks, like, oh, yeah, that's all you got, you
right.
know? And I love it when guys do, like, because I love when they get all chirpy in there and they start, you know, even wanting to just talk shit in there, you know, and kind of continue it. But kudos to both. I thought Jake, he definitely sets – I think a lot of people are already kind of looking at him to maybe carry the banner a little bit
yep.
for this country. And I think he did a wonderful job in how he went out there and represented himself. He's always great in his interviews. He's always forthcoming. And I thought with a performance like that, he showed his heart. He showed his toughness. And kudos to Johnny Case. I thought one of the greatest things as he's leaving, and you even kind of tweet about it and remarked about it, was that the Australian fans, the great fans here, gave him applause as he was leaving.
Yeah.
You know, and I love seeing that. Regardless of whether it's your boy from your country or not, I thought the respect of the Australian people for most of the competitors was incredible. They clapped when they left the building.
Very respectful,
you don't
man.
Ever see that a lot
yeah.
of times because you don't see the cameras and they keep rolling. But every time they walked around, you know, they were clapping all of them. They were reaching. It was great to see.
I agree. I think Johnny Case is going to learn some lessons from this fight, and I think you're going to see him come back strong. And I think Jake Matthews, to me, this was a kind of fight that showed, like, a level of maturity, man, that showed that he's ready for that next step.
Yeah.
It was funny because I was having a conversation with a UFC Australia staff member, we'll just leave it at that, earlier this week, and I said, listen, if you had to go all in on one person right now, if you had to put all your chips onto one guy in your market, one Australian guy, one Kiwi guy, who would you put all your chips on? Thinking that the answer would be Jake Matthews. It wasn't. It was Robert Whittaker. And I think that's probably true. Robert Whittaker is the guy that seems most primed for kind of that next level.
Yep.
But I think this was Jake Matthews taking a huge step up. I think this was him saying, I'm right there behind you, bro. I'm 21 years old. I'm not in a hurry. But this, to me, was a very mature performance, a very mature victory. And, man, I've enjoyed seeing this kid fight so much. I mean, again, 21 years old, and I think he's got a bright future ahead of him.
Yeah, I would love to see the support that people like Sage Northcutt get for something like Jake Matthews. I mean, if he can get the kind of push that's behind that, because the kid's got, he's got talent. And, yeah, I mean – I love these guys, you know, especially like Connor. He carried, you know, all the Irish people around. You know, they kind of put him on their shoulders, and he's taking them along. You got guys like Jake, I think, that are perfect to do the same thing for this sport. You know, we heard in conversation with Beck Rollins that, you know, MMA, it's getting there, the training partners, whatnot, but they kind of feel like they have to leave and go to the States while it's building here. And when you got young little studs like Jake and those guys doing it, Robert Whittaker, no offense to him, I think he's a great ambassador for the sport as well, and I think he'll continue to be. But I'm with you, man. I think Jake Matthews is definitely one of those ones that can really push it and propel it. And if they get the right push behind him, if the UFC really starts pushing them, I think it'd be perfect, and I think it would really help the sport to grow in this country.
I think so. I think Jake Matthews has said, like, he kind of wants to – he doesn't want to leave Australia. He wants to stay here.
He wants to be here.
Get his training here. He wants to be his – you know, be the people here. He wants to do it. And I think that's cool. I think that is – you know, not that there's anything wrong with leaving your country to go get the best training you can. And he says, I leave and cross-train. But when it's time for camp, when it's time to really do it, I think I can do it all in Australia. And I think that would be cool to kind of put the country on his shoulders and say, look, I'm going to wave the flag for our country. He had said before the fight that he would that he would like to fight Sage Northcutt. I was surprised afterwards that he didn't campaign for that fight. I'll be honest, I don't know if the UFC would give him Sage Northcutt. They like Sage a lot.
I know.
I don't know if Sage is ready for Jake right now, to be honest with you.
I agree.
Man, I think Jake looked like a beast.
I agree. And it's unfortunate. You know, you'd like to think that they are going to promote all their athletes the same. But, you know, we see favoritism, and that happens everywhere. You know, I think Sage has done well, and I think he's really got a lot of people paying attention to it. But I think Jake's another guy that, you know, he could. I think he has a chance to do the same thing. And what's great about athletes like that is that they can cross-promote them. I mean, what's wrong? I mean, especially if Jake's coming over to the States to train and doing whatnot, why not promote him this day? I think one of the unique thing about the athletes in the UFC is that it's an international sport. So why not promote the athletes from overseas just as much in the States? You know, bring them around, take them on press tours. I think that's one of the neat things, that when people look at the sport, it's not just some, you know, group of whatever, a few Americans and some random Brazilians and some whatever. I mean, this sport is really growing, and there's the reach of it is getting bigger and bigger, and you're going to run into all these little studs and superstars all around the place. So I just hope that they'll, going forward, they'll keep promoting a lot of those guys. I would love to see him fight Sage. But after that, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Sage was looking like a superstar, and I still think he is a stud. But, yeah, seeing Jake, I mean, I've – That'd be a tough fight.
That'd be a tough fight, man. Yeah, Jake said that he's not in a hurry. He's not trying to rush up the ranks too much. He's got time on his side. I mean, for me, that this week celebrated my 38th birthday, to see a kid that's 21 years old and the type of future, that excites me, man.
Yeah.
Seeing these next level, this next generation of fighters and what they're capable of, man, it gets me pumped up, man. I'm really digging, you know, seeing the next set of stars kind of emerge, and I think this was a big performance from Jake Matthews. So, let's hear from the man himself, the 21-year-old kid, talking about his victory, Jake Matthews.
Question for Jake over here. Jake, to your left. Big win for you tonight against a tough opponent. Two judges had you down going into the third. Can you just tell us a little bit about the mindset going into that third round?
So each round, especially this camp, we've been working on resetting myself. You know, if you're winning the fight, you know, each round, the scores are 0-0 again and the fight starts again. And when you think of it that way, you know, you don't get too overconfident if you're winning, and you don't get too hurried and make mistakes if you're down on points. I thought the first round may have been close. I thought he had the second round. So, you know, my corner got me to reset. I went out there, It was just as if we were fighting the first round again. But as soon as Dan Kelly won his fight, I got a bit more confidence. If you look at our UFC records, they're the exact same. So, you know, when one of us wins, we both win. So that gave me a bit more confidence.
And a good finish for you, another good finish against a tough opponent. Where do you see yourself going next as you continue to climb?
I'm not in a hurry. We always, you know, myself in my corner, we always have a talk about who we might want next, but we always leave it up to the UFC in the end. We trust in their matchmakers. They got, you know, they're the best in the world at what they do, and we trust that they're going to, you know, ease me along at the pace that I need to go and not throw me to the wolves. And as long as I can keep fighting guys that are just, you know, a little bit higher ranked than me, I'll keep working up the rankings, and we're happy to do it that way. So I think we'll just wait and see what the UFC think.
Just a question for Jake, just down here. I saw your eyes light up when you got Fight of the Night. How does it feel to get your first bonus? I know you've been pushing for one. You've had a few impressive performances. How does it feel?
Yeah, you know, with each fight and each finish, you might think that you're close, but I think now fighting higher up on the cards, you've got more of a chance. And it's not even that that's the reason that I fight. It's good to get a little bonus, but you know, the best feeling is getting the win, regardless of the bonus or not, but it is nice to get it.
Question for Jake. You obviously had a lot of success in Australia. Is there a particular card overseas that you're keen on getting on in the future?
No, like I said before, we just live up to the UFC. You know, I just, you know, we just finished the fight, and I never like to look past fights, and I've done it once in my career, and that was the only time I've lost. So when I get a fight, that's the only thing that's on my mind. So we haven't thought about it yet, haven't discussed it with management or my corner yet. We may start looking at where to fight or who to fight next, or we'll just leave it to the UFC. So we'll see what happens.
In the second round of your fight with Johnny, you hurt him to the body. Did you realise you had him hurt at the time, or did it take your corner to let you know at the end of the third round to attack the body more in the third?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I landed the first body kick and he sort of keeled over a bit and made a noise, and it felt like only just my toes got him, and I thought maybe he was just playing. And I think I actually might have said to him, I said, "You're not hurt." I said, you're trying to bait me in. And but then I hit him again, and then he did it again. And then my corner, I knew it was hurting him, but my corner said, "You got to hit him, and then you got to go start going for the finish." And I think I hit him three times with the body, and then we were on the fence, and I saw the opening, so I got the knee, and he turned his back towards me, and that's when I got the back, and that's what led to the finish. So, yeah.
Did you feel that it was 1-1 heading into the third, or you might have been down? What did your corner tell you about the scorecards heading into the third?
They didn't say much. They just said, you know, our game plan is always get the finish, regardless of if we're winning every round or if we're losing every round. And for me, I thought maybe the first round was close. I thought he had the second round. But in my mind, I just told myself, he's winning, I've got to finish it. And I think that I lost the first choke that I was going for, and I was going to just, you know, in your head, you're so tired, you're just thinking, maybe I'll just sit here and ride it out and see if I get the win on points, but I don't like doing that, so I just kept fighting for the second choke, and I think there's only 20 seconds left, and I think I might have been pretty lucky that I got it.
So Jake Matthews, 21 years old, picking up an impressive win over Johnny Case, and like I said, Case will be back too, man. That guy's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I think this was a fun fight between two young kids. Somebody on the opposite end of that spectrum, the one guy that's older than me, I'm proud to say I'm not the oldest guy, Daniel Kelly, he's actually just 5 months older than me, but he's still older than me. I'll tell you what, man, I'm not going to lie. Daniel Kelly, coming into this week, if you'd have told me, John, man, listen, I hate to put you in this situation, bro, but gun to your head, tell me one guy that's definitely going to win a fight this week, or otherwise I'm gonna have to pull the trigger and shoot you. I'd say, Carlos de Zapato. Antonio Carlos Jr. is going to beat Daniel Kelly. Daniel Kelly has no chance in hell. Sorry about it. Thanks for playing. I'm out. That would have been my lock of the week, man. And Daniel Kelly just showed hellacious character, got just dominated in the opening round, and somehow found a way to survive, refused to give up. Things didn't go that much better in the second round as well. And then the third round, just an incredible comeback. Got caught in the groin, and I think realized that Antonio Carlos Jr. was kind of hurting a little bit and fading a little bit, and decided I'm just going to fight. I'm going to keep going.
Yep.
And then was able to tag him and finish with a huge TKO. And it's so funny because on a normal night, we would be talking about Daniel Kelly and his incredible comeback and what a moment this was. But because Neil Magny is such a badass, now you're just like, well, that was like the second best comeback of the night.
I mean, it was a good comeback.
It was a good comeback, but you're no Neil Magny, my friend. And so I felt bad for Kelly that he had to deal with that. But a great performance for him. And, man, what a great attitude that guy has. He's been on the scene forever, knows he's the underdog, knows that everybody counts him out. Says straight up, I know people call me out because they think I suck, and I'm going to keep beating them. And I thought it was an impressive performance to Daniel Kelly, and definitely deserved mention.
Yeah, he's a breath of fresh air. It's funny when you're watching it because, yeah, he was taking some beatings, and somehow that crowd just riled behind him. They're doing that little clap thing where they start clapping in unison, and it felt like I was watching like this cartoon character that was just getting pumped up by all the energy that was in the arena, and he just channeled it, and he became this, like, super powerful creature that just fucking destroyed. What I love about him, too, is just when it got to the time to actually speak at the presser, he's so humble, and he's talking about Australia and the guys coming up, and here he is praising all the other one. He fully takes on the role of, I don't want to say the elder statesman because he's younger than me. I'm the elder statesman. But it was really, really good to see a guy that has been working so hard. He embraces the fact that most times that he's been in a fight, he's been the underdog, and he's proven people wrong, and he continues to want to keep proving them wrong, and he has a good head on his shoulders. He takes it all in stride. He promotes the Australian MMA. I mean, he's definitely one of the guys that I think if there was somebody out there to kind of help shuttle in the next generation, that's definitely a guy that you want kind of leading the way to kind of welcome the other ones. And but no, he had a lot of heart, a lot of heart. But you're right, it was great. It was a good fight. It was not Magny worthy, but it was incredible. Kudos to him. I'm happy to see that he got the win, and we'll get to see him again.
It really did. Turns out he's not going to fight for a while after this. He's going to be potentially, it sounds like, coaching the Australian judo team at the Olympics, which was pretty funny. He's like, I don't know if I'm supposed to release this.
But
I guess I just did in the middle of a live press conference.
Yeah, well, big media contention there, so maybe it wouldn't be maybe it hasn't been released. But we'll speak more about the media
Surely
reaction.
Surely the local media here would release that type of information.
If they were there.
We'll get into that in just a second. In the meantime, let Daniel Kelly tell you about his night.
Just a question from Dan Kelly, Dan over here. I mean, what a moment tonight. You get the upset when the crowd goes crazy. It felt like the arena was going to fall apart from all the crowd cheering for you. Describe for us that finishing sequence when you realized that you won the fight and you heard that reaction from the Brisbane crowd.
It was awesome. It was very clear I was down two rounds. Things weren't going great. I got a good pickup on him and threw a head kick, and I saw his eyes rolling a little bit and sprawled and then just kept punching, and the referee kept saying, defend yourself, you move a little bit. And then, yeah, when they called a stop, I was a little bit overcome with emotion, but it was good, really good win. And the crowd's awesome. The crowd's always fantastic in Australia. We always have loud crowds. We always fill whatever arena it's in. So it's good that the UFC have invested here.
It's funny because every time you're going into a fight, it's like, here's Dan Kelly, he's an underdog. Do you feel like the days of the underdog is over? I mean, this performance sort of proves that you're relevant in the division, even at 38 years of age, even though you came into the sport a bit later.
Yeah, I think I am relevant, and I'll be the underdog again because I want to fight someone who's ranked above me. If you look at a whole heap of different rankings, Antonio Carlos Jr. won a tough show. He was probably rated about 10 or 15 spots ahead of me on a few different ranking things. I want to fight better guys. I want to keep testing myself. And tonight I proved that I can pull a rabbit out of the hat as well. So,
Dan Kelly, you are the ultimate underdog. Every time you have a great win, you get fighters calling you out because they, and you've said it yourself, they see you as an easy win. This is your opportunity. Is anyone out there that you want to call out instead for a change?
No, not at all. I've got a... I have to go back, have a look at the rankings. Probably won't fight again until later in the year. I've got some other commitments. I still coach high-level judo, and potentially I'll be in Rio coaching the Australian Judo Olympic team. So I'm not sure if I'm meant to be announcing that, but anyway. thank you. So I probably won't fight until the end of the year. I emailed Joe Silver about it, and he was like, yeah, go and do that. So it's nice to get a couple of wins in a row. And it's, yeah, like I said, in the octagon, even though I don't remember everything I said. It's keep making me the underdog. I don't mind. I've been an underdog almost every time I fought in the UFC, so it's no problem for me.
All right, Daniel Kelly picked up a big, big victory. Again, apparently we're not going to see him for a little bit, but maybe we'll see him in the Olympic coverage in Rio. Pretty cool moment for him. Big shout-out to all the people of Australia that have been kind to us this week. There's been some – Mark Fellows is a guy that's been hitting me up on Twitter saying a lot of nice things. There's been some other people here that have been taking really good care of us. There have been some other people that were not so nice to us this week, Cole Coffey. I think they're trying to kick us out of I think they're ready for us to leave. We've got to board a plane here in a couple hours, and the local news crew here in – here in Brisbane was not so nice to us.
No. And we've encountered it before. You know, you go to different localities and, you know, you got the local guys that are used to being the big fish, you know, and they have their big cameras and they're used to going in there and kind of bullying people around. So, yeah, we set up for our media days just like we always do at every event. You know, and a lot of these guys, I mean, we're handheld mics. So you got to get kind of close. We just kind of bunch together and scrum. They're not used to that, so they're used to either like a podium setup or something, and they sit way far back, and half the time they're just looking for a couple shots, they're looking for B-roll. So when we have our stuff set up there, they're actually like, hey guys, what's going on here? You know, can you maybe back up a little bit so we can get our shots? And we're like, well, you know, we need our guys asking questions need to be in there so they can ask questions. Oh, well, you know, normally we push it back like this. Well, we'll just trust us. This is how it happens. This is how we do it everywhere in the world. And you know, one of the things that was just know that they're fucking idiots is that when we have the different guys off to the side to ask questions. So imagine, you know, you are a person being interviewed and a person to your left asks you a question. The normal human being thing would be to look at the person that's asking you a question. These people's idea of what you should do
kind
is
individuals.
Hey, can we usually have a person in the middle and that's our point person, and we just tell them to answer all the questions looking at that person. I'm like, okay, well, I guess that makes sense.
That sounds stupid.
But that sounds stupid.
I'd like them to just look me in the eye when I ask them a question. Yeah. Let's just talk. Let's converse.
Let's just have a conversation. That's kind of what interviews are. But lo and behold, as that goes on, you know, they start pushing back, and we got our guys, and we start asking, well, you know, hey, you know, are you going to use this? You know who this is, right? You know, and they'll look over.
It was our friends from Submission Radio, we should say, that were jumping in the mix as well. They were more than happy to say, F you, you're not even going to use this stuff, so why do you care where you're at?
And then which tended to launch this into a huge pissing contest of, oh, yeah, well, who are you with? Where are you from? You know, and we're from Fox. We're from Fox Australia. And like, oh, you know, and we start asking them, well, do you know who this is? Maisha, right? We're like, oh, do you even know she's a champ? Oh, she's a champ? Oh, well, maybe we'll ask her about that, you know? And just like, are you?
And then after all this fighting and bickering going back and forth about how they need room and how they need space and how they need access, they didn't ask a goddamn question the whole day.
Not one question.
The whole day.
Not one question. Not one.
So hold on. The thing is, you need me to move out of the way so you can get a better camera angle of them answering my questions?
Yeah.
Are you sending me a paycheck? Do I invoice you at the end of this? Tell me where your accounts receivables department is. I need to know.
Right. How awkward would it have been if just like moved out of the way and we all just sit there and just looked at him like, okay, go ahead.
That would have been great. Now that's how we're going to handle it next time. Like, you know what? My
and
bad.
Everybody just stare at him.
Yep.
Go ahead. Say what you want. But yeah, so yeah, it's interesting. So maybe we'll have a little tidbit for you.
Yeah, yeah. Stay tuned because we found out, little did we know, audio was rolling as we were kind of having a little bit of our pissing contest, and one of our friends here in Australia was able to send us that audio, so stay tuned if you want a little giggle, and you can hear just the beginning of a little bit of Angry Kenny.
No, I was going to say you can see Angry John. You always talk about Angry Kenny, but you get to hear passive-aggressive Angry John.
I haven't heard this audio yet, but I kind of remember playing it through my head, and keeping in mind, this was like the first day we were here, so we were a little bit tired, and
yeah.
I do think I was a little bit like passive aggressive.
Oh, it was, and let's just say it was good that, you know, we walked away, because there was one point where we just start setting up chairs. How we normally do it, and a lot of times, is we'll set media in chairs down below the cameras, and we wrap around the cameras so that the people can actually stare down, and the reporters can get in there, and nobody's bitching because they can't actually talk to the thing. And it's funny because even when we set the chairs down, they're like, oh, now the sight line. Now they're going to be looking down. I'm like, fuck you and your sightline, you asshole. But it's funny because when we went to go get chairs, I guess they kept chirping away, and that's some of the stuff I think you'll hear in the and the lovely sound that our friend Christian got for us. So
fantastic. All right, well, UFC Fight Night 85, just a couple other things to mention real quick. Steve Bossy picked up an incredible win, 52 seconds over James Tahuna. Looked fantastic. James Tahuna, love him. I got to say, probably going to be about it for James Tahuna, probably being the last time I see him. Steve Bossy walking in over there celebrating his big – I'm not standing in front of him. I don't want that dude to hit me. That's a bad dude.
It's a bad dude.
James Tahuna, one of the nicest guys in the sport you'll ever meet. But I got to say, I think that's probably the last time we see him as a professional, to be honest with you. He was talking about retiring before this fight. He took a lot of time off, got his head right, got his body right, and it still didn't pay off. And he's taking some pretty brutal knockouts, and I hate to say it, but I think that might be the last we see of him.
Yeah, you always want to see somebody kind of go out on a high note. But if he was already starting to contemplate it, I mean, I think the guy's been great. You know, the Haka Warriors that he used to go out with that smashed me in my face that one time, I don't appreciate them totally as much, but I do appreciate James Tahuna, and he's had a great career. He's been a good ambassador to the sport. If he does continue, I'm good with that too, but I would be appreciative. I'm in supportive of his decision if he did walk away. Because again, there's a point where you got to know, it's enough, and you don't want to take too much damage. You know, knockouts are not a pretty thing to take. And, but if he wants to do it again, let's give him another go. But if he walks away, kudos, man, you've had a great career. He's a good dude.
He is for sure. Beck Rawlings picked up a big win for her. Sohi Ham, great fight, man. This is a great way to kick off the main card. Those two girls went at it. They were back and forth. I liked it. I'll be honest. Obviously, I've only seen the fight live. I haven't gone back and scored it again. Watching it live, I scored the fight for Sohi Ham. But I thought it was a very, very close fight. I was really shocked to hear 230-27 scores for Beck Rawlings. Beck's right hand was the most powerful weapon in the fight. There's no doubt about it. She had the power. But I thought Sohi Ham was battling back and throwing with volume and countering well. And watching it live, I scored it for Ham. So I'm interested to go back and watch that again because I did not have 30-27, that's for sure. But was happy for Beck Rawlings, knowing, we had a chance to speak with her earlier this week and all that she has been through and all that she's been dealing with. This was a big, big win for her, and I was happy to see that. And some fantastic performances on the prelims as well. A lot of people we spoke with earlier this week also, so a little bit of a vested interest when you know what a person's going through. But Alan Joban with the first round TKO win. Dan Hooker with the first round submission win. Thought he looked incredible. Leslie Smith, yeah, of course, her first time back. In such a long time since that disappointing loss in Mexico, picked up a decision win as well. And, of course, Ross Pearson, a hard-fought split decision win. That was a fantastic fight with Chad Laprise. I really, really enjoyed that fight. They were back and forth. Wild scores in that one. Three different scores from the judges in the split decision. But overall, man, just a fun card, man. Start to finish. A lot of fun, man. Any of those prelims that really stuck out to you?
Definitely the Pearson fight. I mean, I thought that was actually really, really fun. I mean, there was two guys that, when you watch them go, were really just mirroring each other so well. It was like the battle of the leg kicks and whose leg was going to give out first.
I just spit frosty beverage out of my mouth somehow. Sorry about that.
I thought maybe it was the thought of the leg kicks because they were some devastating leg kicks. Oh, good
I was
selfie.
Photobombing. See that, man?
Photobombing, selfieing while recording a podcast. You are multi-talented.
Dude, I'm all over it, man.
Yeah, and you were spilling beer on your shirt at the same
beer
time.
Beer actually came out of my mouth onto my shirt.
The,
I'm not sure how
that
happened.
Onto the famous blue shirt. Your famous blue shirt that nobody's ever seen before. But no, it was that was one of the great fights. It's tough in the back because a lot of times, we're cutting and we're interviewing, and there were some that just kind of finished before we really got a chance. But I really did appreciate the Ross Pearson fight. I thought the Alan Patrick looked really fucking devastating as well. That was a good fight. But no, overall, I thought it was a good showing. I thought that the PR staff put on a really good, event. I thought that the media room, a lot of times, just to give you insight in the back, a lot of times the food is not the greatest at times in different places. It was spot on here. It was really good, even though they made an attempt at biscuits and gravy, which is very different than our gravy. Like the meat and the sausage or something was something sort of different. And I felt bad because I took a whole shitload of it and put it on my plate because I love biscuits and gravy. And I didn't really get through much of it.
It wasn't quite heated up yet, right?
I don't know. Yeah, it was weird. I don't know. Was that why it was?
I think it
so
was.
Good?
Yeah. All right.
So then maybe we're having like.
But hey, biscuits and gravy for breakfast when you get there is good. And then
yeah,
kudos to the Australian team. They had They had post-fight snacks. We don't get post-fight snacks in the United States. We get some chips and a cookies. They had, like, ribs and wings, and it looked like some burritos or something.
It was actually, I think it was, like, the lunch serving for the medium. So, like, if we were in the meeting room like I normally am and stuck in there, I would have been gnawing on it for a while, you know. And it just happened to just – they just left it in there. And it was – there was so little – well, I feel bad saying so little media turnout that there was still food – there at the end of the thing, which
I didn't see our local friends from Fox. Where were they?
Yeah, where you at, Fox? Huh? With your big ass camera? Couldn't get in the
door. There was plenty of room for the cameras tonight
because their camera was so big. These fuckers.
Yeah, it was a fun night. It really was. I'll tell you what, you know, we do it in Japan and we do it in Australia where we do these morning cards. I dig them, man. I honestly kind of wish that maybe the UFC would think about scheduling some fights like this in the States. You know, maybe not 9 a.m.,
yeah,
but, you know, maybe starting a fight card at like 11 or noon or something like that. You know, kind of like a football game is or something like that. I get it. You know, pay-per-views are Saturday night and all that. But, you know, these Sunday shows that they do from time to time, I really think the UFC should consider doing this because, you know, I think it's a fun environment when it's a day crowd and, you know, people are still hanging out. Maybe it has to do with the fact that it's only like 7:30 p.m. and we're trying to wrap up work right now. That probably has something to do with it as well. But I do like the day card. Yeah. I don't think it necessarily has to be, you know, midnight or 2 a.m. when we finish up fights. I think honestly that the UFC should consider maybe doing some shows like this stateside too.
I wouldn't be opposed to it. There is something nice about being able to walk outside and the sun's still lit, you know, from the first time that the sun's been up rather than be working and it's completely dark and we've been going and then the sun's coming back up and you're like, oh no, not again.
That happens quite a bit.
Yeah, it does, unfortunately. But no, it'd be great. And it, you know, you feel bad for a lot of countries because I know for a while there they were really trying to make the push. Oh, we're going to put events on in the country's local time, and they want to make it, you know, local, a local thing. But unfortunately, they can't ever get away from the fact that they need the U.S. market involvement.
Right.
And this was kind of one of those things where it's about as early as they could do it and still involve the market. But we're just far away. I mean, what is it, 18 hours from Vegas or whatever, so we're 15 hours from the East Coast. It's a long time. It's a big difference, and it's tough to kind of do that and hope that you're going to get a market back there. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it. And
it was good. It was very entertaining, start to finish. Like I said, Alan Chauvin, I'm still a big fan of that kid. To me, he's must-watch TV. You know, whether or not he'll ever be a contender, I don't know, but he looked fantastic. You know, again, I have a history with him. I saw him, you know, I called some of his fights in Tough Enough. I called his pro debut, but it's been fun to see him develop. I'm a Hangman fan. Dan Hooker, dude, if you're not a Hangman fan, like, you got to get on that kid. He's fun to watch, man. I've really enjoyed watching him kind of develop. He's still very early in his UFC career. But seriously, if you haven't seen his fights and he's been buried on some prelims, go back and watch his fights. Pull it up on Fight Pass. This kid, I think he really has some talent now that he's training in the States. Apparently soaking up whatever you can on the couch of Neil Magny because that man's a hero. It rubs off. And, of course, Leslie Smith had a great fight as well. So, to me, just a fun fight all the way around from start to finish. And now it's early. We got some friends around us here.
Yeah, I got a strong showing from the Fight Club here in Australia. You know, they've been really doing a really good job of kind of keeping this thing going. First met them a couple years back, and you know, and they've been strong, and they've kind of adopted us as one of their own. So, you know, I wish the UFC would get them a little bit more support and backing to kind of help them.
Send a message out there.
Yeah, hey, I'm just throwing it out there. You know, I know, you know, Rachel and Gavin and Natalie and all those guys, Sven and everybody could use a little bit of support, you know. But I thought it was incredible that they kind of put it on their shoulders and kind of do it themselves. And I thought it was great that one of our favorite executive vice presidents with the longest title in history, Mr. Tom Wright, came out to their fan get-together yesterday and brought a belt and everything and did it. So I thought that was spectacular. So, yeah, we're still here hanging out and having a couple drinks with them. And
Tom Wright's title, for the record, Executive Vice President and General Manager for UFC Operations in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand.
Exactly.
How's that for a title?
I know, right? That's a stud. but he just showed that he was a good person. He came out, and there was a good showing from the Australian fans here, and this has been a strong group. They've always made me, and even my time when I was still with the UFC, made us feel at home, and they continue to do it again here. So, you know, I would like to see a little bit better support from the UFC going forward.
Cold coffee just throwing down.
You know,
the challenge
but, you
out.
Know, It's good. I think other countries and other groups could learn a lot from what these people do to kind of promote the sport.
You hear that, UFC? Cole Coffey's laying the challenge. Take care of our Fight Club members here
Take
in Australia,
damn it.
Take care
of our Fight Club members.
Oh, wow. Should actually got some response there. All right. Seth. I like this. I'm going to start championing more causes. I like this, man. So, listen, we're going to actually have some frosty beverages with these guys. So we're going to wrap things up. It's actually early enough in the night that we can do that. Then we're flying home. We've got a 5 a.m. flight out of Brisbane back to the United States. A week at home, so we'll be doing the next show. 1 year will be officially done, and we'll be doing it for home in Las Vegas. I've actually got a trip to Disneyland the week after that, but we're still going to do a podcast.
That's right. My mom's going to be in town. My mom's going to be in town. Maybe I'll make her watch.
Still doing it. You're going to American Top Team pretty soon to celebrate their grand opening of their new facility.
Very excited
so we're
going to
have a
that.
Lot of stuff there. And, of course, 3 weeks from now, I guess, we'll be in Croatia. So a lot of fun stuff ahead for the MMA Roadshow. In the meantime, what's ahead for the MMA Roadshow right now is more frosty beverages. I know you have to edit this thing, but fortunately it doesn't take that long, and you're pretty good at it. So let's get that done. Let's get some frosty beverages.
Let's do
and
it.
Stay tuned to hear Passive Aggressive John get a little bit a-hole-ish on some local media people, and thanks for listening.
How many whatevers or whatnots have I said so far?
You'll find out soon.
I know. I just didn't even think about it. I was like, fuck. Somebody right now is counting my whatnots and whatevers.
You will find out via Twitter very soon.
There's another superstar right there. Leslie Smith in the building. Impressive fight.
She looked good. All right, we're good? Still rolling?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, we could try, but most of them forget because it's conversation-wise.
Yeah. I mean, he's out of my head. You guys feel bad.
I think that's stupid.
I don't know about that, actually. Not for this one.
It's not. It's conversational. It's not.
Yeah.
It's
not for this one.
It might. It might be a little bit weird though if we're asking questions and they stare into blank space. They might kind of like.
Maybe not with this one because this is the biggest one.
I mean,
for
I can
us.
Go back to where I was standing, and then you guys, it would be in your direction, and then he would be where he was standing, so it would be more forward. We can do that.
Yeah, because if we put it up,
them
staring forward, like, we'd get some crazy comments in to the videos. We were like, what's going on?
We could try to move back. Like I said, most of these guys have mics.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, she's going to be going that way, either back of the head or what, if that's possible.
I mean, do you want to do like we do in the Pulse Fight Scrums?
Just down below. Just to there.
Yeah, we could try it.
Audio,
I mean.
Because also the journos have got to be like working on the extremities too. Like
I think that's the concern. If we're further, we still like our arms are still going to still
again,
be.
Being
well,
the shot
doesn't get in your way.
No, but your cameraman can go back and you can get caught long enough.
Yeah. As long as you guys are happy with us.
Yeah, it's just more the camera. We're all going to be doing that. Like the same with me over here. But so what I'm saying, it's just obviously if she's more front on, I think everyone benefits.
Yeah. Have you with Zoom?
I can get close. You might have to.
I'll try this. How's that?
Yeah, what I'll do. Give me a sec.
Gotta stand behind her. Peek around like that.
Okay.
Talking to this.
Like, if anyone,
just
watch. I can hold it as well. Anyone can hold it.
Yeah.
You put it on there, mate.
Go for it.
I guess I'll have to go underneath. Yeah. How's that? Can you see?
That's okay. I'll see the mic.
Okay. I guess I'll just go.
Yeah.
If I do that, how's that? Is that in the shot?
Yeah.
That's
heaps in the shot. Yeah. How will you hold it? Do it again.
It's in the shot.
Yeah, it's really in the shot, man.
Like that. You kind of have to put your arm on the table, sort of thing.
Like that.
Yeah, you can't see the mic, but that's good.
Yeah, if the mic gets closer.
How's that for you guys?
Yeah. I've been doing this
since a long time. Looks says 1,000 words.
I posed a question an hour or so when I first got here.
Oh, right.
And that was apparently the protocol, the way they do things.
It's like that around the world.
It's like that every week. We're literally here every single week.
Yes.
This is a joke. I mean, this is literally the lightest media turnout I've ever seen.
Yeah, but
you do like to get in a...
We have to. I mean, normally there's like 40
But are you guys, for
cameras.
Example, like this, would you guys use Misha Take for Fox Sports or something?
Yeah.
I bet you won't.
Well, you want to fucking bet? $20.
Oh, all right.
Jeez.
What are you gonna? What are you gonna
the
ask?
The fight's on Sunday.
What are you
not
gonna,
today.
What are you gonna ask? That's gonna be on Fox Sports.
Who are you from?
I'm not worried.
So who did she beat last night? So who's the champion? Who's the champion?
She's the champion.
Oh, right. Okay, we'll ask that.
What does that even mean?
Yeah, they got questions now.
Where's he from?
Oh, jeez.
All right. Come on, everybody. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, because I think it's more arguing the point.
I mean, if we grab some chairs, we can do like a good post fight.
I mean,
it's not bad. Then
there should be an interesting media week.
I don't know if they're one they have enough chairs. Lovely blokes. Could I come in between one of you lovely blokes there? Would that be right? I'm not hassling anyone.
I'm just trying to get a shot.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
No, for sure.
You guys go overseas, take your shit overseas. We've got to justify
here,
the local market.
Here's what we'll do. This is what we do for post fights.
Yeah.
Is we'll scoot back a little bit.
Yeah.
And we'll set a row of chairs right here.
Yeah.
And all the reporters can sit in front of their cameras.
Yep.
Underneath it.
Yeah.
And you can shoot over their shoulders, and that's how we do it post fight.
Yeah, cool. All right.
So if we can grab some chairs, we'll kick it. We'll help out.
Thank you,
back
fellas.
Here.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Just watch the.
Just don't hold the lights. Yeah.
For you too, brother. We'll hold it for you if you want, but that's that way all the reporters can sit below and you guys can shoot over. It'll be less of a crowd.
Okay, so there's four of us?
There's as many as you want. We'll crowd as many chairs as you want, brother.
Thanks, man.
You got it.
I can't believe that they said that to us.
Something along those lines. I can't believe it. We didn't hear because we were in the point of moving the chairs or whatever. But when he told me that, I was like, they said what? I was like, these motherfuckers. But they're the kind of motherfuckers that talk shit under their breath when people walk away when nobody's there. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, you're a badass. You're a badass. Oh, well.
All right, so rolling.
Yep.